It's my privilege this morning. Governor J.B. Pritzker is joining us. Governor, long time no talk. You've been well?
I'm doing great. How about you, Tom?
Good, good, and healthy, as you asked before I went on the air. You know, it's interesting, Governor, whenever I had announced that you were going to be joining us today, I got a phone call from my sister, Tabitha, lives in Marion. She says, your nephew, Landon, has a question for you. And she put him on the phone. He's four, by the way.
And, oh, my goodness.
And he says, it took me a couple times to decipher it. He's four, after all. And he says, why doesn't Governor J.B. want me to go to gym? And I found that question interesting, Governor, because I realized that little light bulb went off my head and said, everybody has their own perspective, don't they, when it comes to the situation we find this in. The stark reality of their own perspective, especially when they're stressed, whether you're the governor, the mayor, you work at a nursing home, or you're a four-year-old that just wants to go to gym on Saturday.
I completely understand where Landon is coming from. I think everybody in Illinois does, too. And I want to say to Landon, I want you to be able to go to the gym. I want you to be able to go spend time with your friends and enjoy sports. And, you know, there's so many things that I think we'd all like to be doing right now. But unfortunately, the virus that's making people sick also wants you to go to the gym, because the virus can only thrive and do, you know, the damage that it wants to do when people get together and they are in close proximity from one another and they're not wearing masks and maybe even sweating near each other. And so we've got to keep the virus at bay. We've got to make sure that the virus doesn't infect you or any of your friends or other people in the school. And so that's why temporarily, we just need to kind of stay away from doing things that will help the virus do the damage that it wants to do. And I'm glad that Landon asked the question, because I think this is what most people are asking. Why do we have to do these things? This virus is awful. It is pervasive. It's everywhere. You know that early on in, Tom, that early on in the pandemic, Southern Illinois didn't suffer as much as Northeastern Illinois, Chicago, and Cook County, and the collar counties. And I think a lot of people in Southern Illinois felt like, hey, this isn't really a virus that affects us. But now I think we're seeing that, because in rural areas and across Southern Central Illinois and even Northwestern Illinois, so many people are getting sick, and unfortunately some people are going to the hospital, and then ultimately some are dying, more so than in Cook County and in the collar counties, that we now understand everybody does. This virus is everywhere, and we've just got to do everything we can to put it down.
It's interesting, when I speak to whether they're elected officials or doctors, they don't seem to envy you your position. It's not like you can go to a state university and get governing a state in a pandemic 101 at any university. So you've got science, but you know, you've got all these things are going. It's almost like the universal admission, when we're just two people talking, is, I'd like to do this, I think this is right, but what if I'm wrong? I mean, how do you come to these decisions when you have so many different inputs and opinions constantly just parading in front of you?
Well, you're 100% right. There's nobody alive today that's been through a pandemic, at least not in the United States. And so these decisions are hard. They're decisions that have to come, in my opinion, from the doctors and from scientists, at least their good advice. We can't just rely on kind of, you know, hearsay and what people would like to have happen. This is a question of, what is it that makes people sick from this virus, and how do we avoid that? How do we keep people alive? How do we keep our hospitals from getting overrun? And so I've been following the science, listening to doctors from day one, trying to do everything that I can. And people are right when they say, you know, none of the decisions that I've had to make are easy. They're really choices between, you know, bad and worse, because there are no good, easy decisions. I mean, you know, do you keep schools open or do you close schools? Do you keep shops open even though you know that, you know, that the virus can jump from one person to another in a closed space? Do you keep bars and restaurants open indoors when you know that people who are unmasked and sitting together indoors, you know, for more than an hour usually, are getting infected. All over the world this happened, and so almost all over the world, bars and restaurants have been closed. Nobody likes this. I want bars and restaurants open. We all enjoy them, and also we've got a lot of people who rely upon them for jobs and for profits. It's good for the state when there's, you know, the economy is doing well, but this virus isn't allowing us to do everything we want to do if we also want to keep people alive.
And you've also, as a result from some of those decisions, have seen a lot of legal challenges from some people in particular more often than others.
Yeah, it's the snake oil salesmen who don't, you know, who want to sell something to the, you know, to their plaintiffs, get the plaintiffs to pay them to file lawsuits. The reality is that when you have an emergency, and this is really an emergency, it's a disaster that's hit the state. You know, whether it's a tornado, flood, God forbid, a war. In this case, it's a pandemic. The pandemic affecting the entire state of Illinois. You know, the law allows decisions to be made like the ones that I've had to make. And unfortunately, members of the General Assembly aren't able to act as quickly as the executive branch can. And so we've had to make some tough decisions. You know, the Emergency Management Act allows me to do that. I've tried to make good decisions to keep people alive. We've kept our positivity rate lower than most every state that we're neighbors to. You know, Iowa has a 60% positivity rate, you know, and that's been somewhat persistent over the last month or two. Same with Wisconsin. Ours is, you know, around 11, 12% now, and that's high for us.
Yeah.
And we're doing everything we can to keep people healthy and keep them out of the hospital.
Before I spoke with you this morning, I reached out to SIH to take a look at the issue of hospital staffing, which you've been taking a lot. Just as one unit, on any given day, some 200 employees out. Now, that doesn't mean they're all frontline care workers. Maybe they work in the kitchen, or they work in cleaning, or they're a lab technician, or whatever. So on any given day, about 200 employees out and 30 to 50 nurses out with COVID-19 tests. They've hit bed capacity already. On one occasion, they had 58 in their admissions on November 8th, and that was one of their high numbers. But this is another one of the issues that's causing us a challenge. We may have the bed, but we don't have the staffing. It's a new type of triage.
Yeah, well, the soldiers on the front lines of this war are just the very people you just named. It's not just the nurses and the doctors, but the cafeteria workers and the sanitation engineers and, you know, people who work at the hospital. They're going every day into a building where they know COVID-19 is prevalent. And so think about how hard that is every day on the people who work at a hospital. And then, you know, they're more likely to get sick, just like soldiers who go to the front lines of war are more likely to get shot. And so we've got to keep them safe as best we can. But in the meantime, as some of them are sick and home and isolating, we have staffing issues. There's no doubt about it. And it lowers the number of beds that you can really put people in hospitals around the state. And in southern Illinois, that's a particular problem because there just are fewer beds overall. So we're doing everything we can. We've relicensed people who retired from the profession, who are willing to come back into healthcare. We've just given them their licenses back to come back to work. And then people in the spring who were about to graduate from nursing school and from other professions in healthcare that were just a month away when we had to impose a stay-at-home order, we allowed them to get their credits so they could graduate and enter the workforce because we needed them. And then we're doing everything we can to try to hire staff from around the country, independent contractors, and bring them to Illinois. But these are all things you got to do in tandem. You know, when there's a wave, a storm that's hit the entire country, and specifically here in the Midwest, it's very hard to find staff. And so that's why I need everybody, and I'm hoping everybody will wear a mask, will keep socially distanced, will stay home if they can right now, because if we can get a little bit healthier in Illinois, we can keep the hospitals from getting overrun and really protect those frontline workers.
I think the light at the end of the tunnel, you know, the announcement yesterday, the United States has secured 300 million doses of the vaccine from AstraZeneca, paying up to $1.2 billion. That comes up to $4 a dose. And the news yesterday that Illinois is preparing to disseminate, I think it is 400,000 vaccine doses.
Well, let me back up just for a second. A lot of the promised doses that the federal government is going to acquire have not been produced yet. So those are contracts that have been signed. And Illinois, actually, the first doses that we'll get will be about 80,000. That's what we've been informed so far by the CDC. You know, we're going to start with healthcare workers and people who work at long-term care facilities, people who live in long-term care facilities, nursing homes and such. You know, we need to vaccinate the most vulnerable and the very frontline workers that we were just talking about. So I'm excited about the idea that it's not just AstraZeneca, as you know, but I think there are four companies now that seem to have vaccines that they haven't been approved yet by the FDA. But when they do get approved, and I hope that's in a matter of just weeks, that we'll begin to be able to vaccinate because they're beginning to manufacture the numbers of doses that will be needed for the first line, for the frontline workers. It won't really be until the spring, Tom, by most people's guesstimation, including Dr. Fauci and other experts, that we'll be able to vaccinate the general public. And that will take some time because some people aren't going to be first in line to get the vaccine. So we're hoping, praying that we can get there without losing a lot more lives. But unfortunately, we're in a very, very tough position right now. And it's why I really am begging people, if you can keep away from Thanksgiving gatherings, you know, if you can stand it. I know that it's a tough time of year to stay away from your family. But, you know, I'm choosing to be apart from family because it's so important for us to not infect one another and to protect each other. And I would say the same about your friends, other loved ones. Please do everything that you can right now because we can see the light at the end of the tunnel. It's only a few months away, and let's not lose any more people.
It's interesting when it comes to mask mandates, talking to law enforcement, talking to mayors. One mayor actually used the term nebulous, saying, I know what the governor wants us to do. I don't know that I have the tools to do it. I'm afraid that my law officers and the city will end up in court on the losing end of a liability lawsuit, that the restrictions and laws that I have to be able to enforce them are rather nebulous. And they seem to be in a quandary when it comes to how to go about what you're requesting them to do.
Well, that's sort of a false story that has been put out by the snake oil salesmen out there, you know, who don't want mask mandates to be enforced and they don't want the capacity limits to be enforced. The truth is that local law enforcement absolutely have the ability to, first of all, to issue warnings at businesses and then to follow that up with a dispersal order if the business is too packed with people. And then finally, to cite them with a fine when they're not following the required rules. And law enforcement has the ability to do that right now, just like they have the ability to enforce speeding laws and seatbelt laws and other things like that. They might choose not to, which I think in this case leads to a lot of sickness and death, so they ought to take that into account. They can choose not to enforce, like they choose sometimes not to enforce a speed limit, but we need them to enforce. And that's what mayors and city councils, counties, and ought to be doing is they ought to have their own mask mandates in place with their own fines, however it is that they want to enforce. But you need to do some enforcement. I think if everybody thinks that there's no enforcement, nobody's going to follow the rules. Except for people who I think just have a bent towards saving each other's lives. But there are a lot of selfish people out there. And I think, in particular, I'm worried about the politicians are worried about their electoral futures if they try to impose any rules here. But I would say there are many more people than the loud ones that you're hearing from. In fact, the loud ones are in the minority. The majority of people really want to stay safe, and they want their leaders to do the things that will keep them safe and get them through to get a vaccine and and get beyond this pandemic.
Governor, I should have let you go a couple of minutes ago. Can I keep you a couple of more minutes? I got a couple of more. I don't want to put you out. I know you shoehorned me in, and I appreciate it.
Of course. Of course.
This is an issue that I've spent a lot of time on the air talking about, and you have been talking about a lot in these COVID updates. And I think yesterday included, too, the cure deadline, December 3rd. My count is 552 communities have applied, and some 350 are out there. There's a lot of money on the table. According to the Associated Press, we don't get it. It's not disseminated. It goes back to the government, federal government, or more accurately, we're not reimbursed, I think is the term.
That's right. And most local communities had to spend something to deal with the pandemic, certainly in the early months, but I would say all along here. For example, overtime by their local police, the cost of programs that they've had to expand or extend that are special during the pandemic. Maybe it's they had to provide some child care that they didn't think they would otherwise be doing. But local communities have had expenditures. So it's surprising to me that 350 or more have not yet applied for any of these funds, because when they don't do that, if they've had expenditures, that means the taxpayers locally are going to have to make up for it with property tax increases or other local taxes. And, that's a shame, because the federal government has offered this money. We've made it available to all the cities and towns and counties. And I'm especially focused on downstate Illinois. I mean, this is, as you know, communities across Illinois outside of Cook and the Collars have often been forgotten. And I've really tried to focus on these communities and get them resources for job creation and other things. Here, the federal government is making this available. We at the state level are making it available. Please take the money. That's all I can say. Please apply for it and take it. We'll help you do it.
When it comes to going back to Springfield, the legislature and yourself have your work cut out. Going back to Springfield, dealing with the things that are on the table and the budgets, the ramifications of the last election, and what you can do about getting the budget back under control. You have your work cut out. It's like juggling about three or four balls, and they're all on fire.
Well, I knew when I ran for governor that we had a lot of challenges in Illinois. We've had a few added on top of it in the last year anyway. Yes, we have two challenges from a fiscal perspective that we have to overcome. One is One is we've had a long-term structural deficit in Illinois that's existed for a long time. It got worse under my predecessor, who really didn't pass a budget for more than 2 years. And state government kept spending anyway because it was required by law to do so. The deficits and the bills that were left from that and the long-term structural problems of the budget. So I knew I was dealing with that. Then along came coronavirus. And the problem is that not only did we lose tax revenue as a result, because, of course, so many people are hurting, have lost their jobs. Small businesses have been challenged to stay, keep their doors open. Many have closed because of the virus. And then, so there are all kinds of revenues that the state loses, sales tax revenues, income tax revenues, and so on, from all the financial, fiscal devastation. And that's occurred all across the country, I want to be clear. And then add on top of that the increase in spending that you have to do in order to keep people alive. We had to go out and acquire PPE and other things to make sure that we kept people safe. And so when you add all those, together, some need for increased expenditures, the loss of revenues, and then the long-term deficit that we already had, that's a world of hurt for us from a fiscal perspective. So we've got to balance the budget with all of those challenges in mind. I'm working very hard with the leaders as well as individual members of the General Assembly to make sure that everybody understands we got to start with cuts. We have to look at state government and find areas where we can come to some agreement that these are things that at least temporarily, if not on a more permanent basis, we need to reduce expenditures at. And then we'll have to figure out if we can get to where we need to be with cuts. And we'll do everything that we can. But I really believe that part of my job and the reason that I ran for this job and became governor is because I want to solve the long-term problems of the state. I want to create jobs and create a better future for everybody. And we've got to do that by balancing the budget on a more permanent basis. Meanwhile, I need help from the federal government like every other state does and like, frankly, cities do, too. The federal government gave, you know, billions and billions, in fact, trillions now, of dollars to private corporations during the pandemic. But they skipped over giving money to cities and counties and states. And Florida and Texas, just to give you an idea, this is not a red state, blue state issue. Florida, Texas, you know, Illinois, we all have the same problems. We all lost revenue. We all had to increase some expenditures. There's a big hole, you know, and that could lead to more layoffs, and it could lead to significant long-term problems for all of our state governments.
You know, before I let you go, there is some good news out there. When you were in Southern Illinois at SIU on the send-off for the National Guard troops as they were going to the Middle East, they have now returned. There, at least some of them are in Fort Bliss now undergoing quarantine. They won't be home for Thanksgiving, but it looks like they'll be home for Christmas.
It's great news, and I think everybody in Illinois ought to be so proud of our National Guard. We literally have one of the best National Guards in the country. It's recognized as such. We've got a great leader, our Adjutant General, Rich Neely. And honestly, we all should be so proud. I certainly am. I'm proud to be the Commander-in-Chief of the National Guard and to help it grow. It has been vital to us in protecting people during this COVID crisis, and we're going to continue to rely upon them for our safety and security.
Dark or white meat, Governor?
A little bit of both, but, you know, because, you know, I never miss a meal or any part of a turkey, but I would say I'm more of a light meat than a dark meat kind of a guy.
Well, we wanted to make sure we had all the important stuff in. I still had more, but I've kept you so much longer than you agreed to be on, and I can't tell you much I appreciate you being so gracious with your time, because I know you're busy.
Hey, thanks so much, Tom. Always good to talk to you, and stay healthy. Have a happy Thanksgiving, you and all your listeners.